Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Health, Finance and Policy Committee. The first order of business will be to take the roll. Ms. Niedernhofer, if you would take the roll.
Liebling.
Present.
Hewitt.
Present.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Eklund.
Present.
Backer. Backer. Bonner.
Present.
Bierman.
I'm sorry, were you saying Becker?
I said Backer.
Backer, present.
Okay. Backer, present, and Bonner is present. Bierman?
Present.
Bolden?
Present.
Damoth?
Damoth, present.
Freiberg?
Present.
Grinhagen?
Present.
Heal.
Present.
Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Munson. Munson. Pryor.
Present.
Quam.
Present.
Ryer.
Present.
Schultz.
Present.
Wolgamott?
Present.
A quorum is present.
Munson. And Munson is there as well.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. All right, a quorum is present. And next order of business is to approve the minutes of the meeting of March 23rd. Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, I so move.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt moves approval of the minutes of March 23rd. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? There being none opposed, the motion prevails. The minutes are approved. All right. Thank you, members. So again, we're going to take up House File 2128, which is the governor's budget. And today we're going to be hearing from the Department of Health items that are in our bill. So the first thing is there is an amendment, which is the A1 amendment. And just so members know, this was sent out a little bit late, but we're going to waive the deadline for hearing this amendment just so that we can get the bill in the shape in which we want it to be heard. But I am going to ask the department to walk through the amendment before we do adopt it, just in case anyone didn't get a chance to see it. It actually was produced earlier, but there was a drafting concern, and so we weren't able to get the proper, it wasn't in the proper form for this bill. So the substance of it has been around for a little while, but we're going to ask the department to walk through the amendment, and then we will adopt that, and then we'll have them walk through the rest of the articles that are under their purview. And then we'll have a little bit of a presentation from House Fiscal on the licensing board appropriations, and then we'll take public testimony. So quite a bit to do there. So Mr. Bunker, I see you're here, and I are you doing our walkthrough for us?
Madam Chair, yes, I am
all
today.
Right.
Joshua Bunker, Chief Financial Officer with the Minnesota Department of Health. I apologize that I don't-
Bunker, okay, before you do that, I'm going to just move the A1 amendment, just to bring it before us. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity. I have in front of me a, I should say, I do not have in front of me the amendment. I have HF 2128 as amended to be able to walk through in the articles. Is that acceptable?
So sort of I'm laughing because yesterday the DHS came prepared to do what you're doing, and they came prepared to do it the other way, and then I made them do it the way you're proposing. And I was going to go back to the other method today. Well, let me ask the members if that's okay. Honestly, the amendment, as I read it, has a couple of more substantive issues, and it's mostly a change in the level of the appropriation. So are members okay if we just adopt the amendment and then go through it as amended? Is there any objection to doing that? Let me ask that. All right, not seeing any objection to doing that. So let's then adopt the amendment to get the bill in the order in which we want to discuss it, and Mr. Bunker will talk about it as amended. So all those in favor of the A1, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So Mr. Bunker, please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much. I apologize for the confusion. Beginning at Article 4 on page 78 of...
And Mr. Bunker, we're having a little trouble understanding you. Are you... I don't know if it's your connection or you're not close to the mic.
Madam Chair, I'll begin again and speak a little more loudly. I apologize.
That's much better. Thank you.
I'll use my outdoor voice. To the amended HF 2128 today, beginning at Article 4, which is on page 78. Section 2 contains the appropriations. The amendments adjust the totals on 7820, and then the general fund amount on 7823. As amended in the A1, the governor's revised budget recommendations will only have an impact upon the fund balance for the general fund. And those impacts will appear in subdivision 2 only for the health improvement section of health's budget. Those amended items would include in the governor's rec, we have spoken already and included in the pre-amended, the fetal an infant mortality review and the maternal morbidity. This amendment would add in tobacco vaping prevention and cessation to that section, as well as an operating adjustment in that section. Recommended reductions would adjust from ongoing, the right sizing of home visiting grants and right sizing of fetal alcohol syndrome grants to one-time reductions only. And the Merck program proposed reduction that was on 81(1-6) is removed. Added in that section will include the shift of the prescription drug transparency item. This will be a $210,000 increase in this bill, and then in this section, and then an adjustment on page 86, too. That would be the reduction to laws of 2019. The reduction in this present fiscal year of $395,000 would then be offset by a $210,000 increase in this year in the bill as amended. And finally, there will be the addition of transaction fees with an impact to the state government's special revenue only. And I apologize that I do not have the correct amendment in front of me for where that would be located. And that is the completion of all of the items that would be in the amendment and reflects the governor's revised budget recommendations. So a very few items.
Okay, Mr. Bunker, if you could then just, you've mostly been focusing on the amendment now. So let's focus, who's gonna walk through the articles of the bill as amended? Are we gonna, let me stop, pause and ask if members have any questions on anything that Mr. Bunker just was discussing. Okay, not seeing any. Is someone going to walk through the articles of the bill then, Mr. Bunker?
Madam Chair, all of these adjustments occur in Article 4 only, and okay. only in Section 2, Subdivision 2 for these changes.
Okay, but we have not really had a walkthrough of the bill before the amendments. So that's what I'm looking for here. And I understand it's sections, it's articles 4 through 6. So we talked about the appropriations in Article 4, but then we have Article 5, which is health policy, and then actually Article 6 is also an appropriations chapter, which I think that's probably what we could have fiscal staff walk through. But is there somebody who's going to walk us through the changes that are in Article 5?
Madam Chair, I apologize. I believe the agency was only prepared to walk through the budget items. But that was our understanding.
Okay, well.
And unfortunately, I'd have to ask to see if someone would be available to come on perhaps later in the.
All right, well, that being the case, I hope that we are gonna hear testimony on Article 4 and on Article 5. So I hope that we have staff available to respond to questions and so on both of those articles. So, all right, well, if there are no, well, let me see if there are any other questions for members then before we move on to the next portion. Before we go to the public testimony, we will ask House Fiscal staff to walk through the licensing boards. So, any questions? All right, not seeing any. All right, thank you, Mr. Bunker. So, Mr. Berg is with us, and he's going to walk through the licensing board appropriations. Welcome, Mr. Berg.
All right, Madam Chair and members, very quickly, something we don't spend a lot of time talking about, but which is part of our budget, is the health licensing boards. They are non-general fund, so it's all state government special revenue, although they, with a very slight exception, that there is an appropriation that was made relative to Representative Howard's bill to the Board of Pharmacy in 2019 on the insulin program for a few years. But other than that, it's all general fund. The governor's recommendation is an increase collectively for all the boards of $1,462,000 in 22-23 and $942,000 in 24-25. Again, this is all from state government special revenue fund money. These boards are self-funded by there are a few exceptions, but primarily it's the cost of licensure of the members of their boards. So doctors are licensed by the Board of Medical Practice and need to pay a licensure fee, and that is the primary source of revenue. The revenue fund has enough money to support the governor's recommendations without fee increases, and there are of where the money is going, there are a couple of notable things. There are some general operating adjustments to a few of the boards. There is an IT revision that after a study of minute costs, the boards are paying somewhat higher indirect cost rates for IT services for minute than what's warranted, and they're are reductions in their costs for IT for 8 of the boards. There is of specific items, there is a new investigator at the Board of Social Work. There is a one-time retirement cost item at the Board of Dentistry. There is a base adjustment relative to the assisted living licensure provision that was enacted in the last biennium at the Board of Executives for Long-Term Supports and Services. And there is a staffing increase at the Board of Nursing. And then no cost overall, but item that's happening is the boards all act, they have what's called the Administrative Services Unit that provides all the back office type functions for all of the boards. That is currently housed at what is the Board of Executives of Long-Term Services and Supports, and it's being moved to the Board of Dentistry. As I say, there's no cost impact for that other than the money, the cost of the ASU is withdrawn from the one board and added to the other. There's no physical change. They're all housed together. So that's a purely technical change. And Madam Chair, unless there are questions, that is everything to do with the boards.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Berg. And we do have members from the boards here to answer questions if members have them. But I did think it was, this is a relatively small and usually non-controversial part of our budget, but I did think it was important for members to understand a little bit about how all of this works. So please do ask questions if you have any.
Well, that would be
less than. And Madam Chair, I should correct myself. I believe I said there were 8 boards that were affected by the IT cost change, indirect cost change. It's actually 9.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berg. And so, okay. I mean, sometimes the things that come to the legislature that tend to be controversial occasionally is when a board is asking for a fee increase or something like that, or there's some kind of, assumption of new duties or, changes. But I think as Mr. Berg was saying, we're not seeing a lot of that this year. So, okay. Well, thank you for that, Mr. Berg. Appreciate it. And members too, just to remind everyone that you did have the change pages sent out to you. So if you were to go back in your email, or I downloaded all that stuff onto my computer, you can in fact go through and read a more detailed accounting of any of the boards that you would be interested in, and more specifics about why they are asking for a small increase, if they are. So, all right. Very good. So the next thing on the agenda then will be to have public testimony. And before we do that, the staff is telling me that I screwed up, which isn't too unusual, that I was supposed to state that I was taking House File 2128 from the table. So so we are. I am. And we already moved the amendment. So if anyone thinks we need to re-vote on the amendment, we could do that. But I kind of think it's not really necessary. But anyway, we are formally taking the bill from the table. We have it before us. So let me see if the staff thinks we need to re-vote on the amendment. I hope they'll tell me. Okay. Given that, let's turn then to the public testimony and on Article 4, which is the Health and Health Board Appropriations. And the first person on the agenda is Jackie Seawert. Ms. Seawert, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. My name is Jackie Seawert, and I'm an assistant program director for the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota, also known as ANSWER. 2 weeks ago, I spoke with a disabled Minneapolis renter who had spent most of the weekend living out of her car because secondhand smoke drifting into her apartment was making her symptoms unbearable. For most of us, secondhand smoke is a thing of the past and not something we have to endure every day. For others, it still endangers their health and safety. ANSWER is dedicated to reducing the human and economic costs of tobacco use in Minnesota. Our core commitments are to reduce the number of young smokers, combat health inequities, and advocate for the health of all Minnesotans, including the women I just described. I'm here today speaking in favor of Governor Walz's proposal to invest $8 million a year in tobacco prevention and treatment. Dedicated funding is urgently needed to address tobacco use and the youth vaping epidemic, help smokers quit, and protect clean indoor air. The Clean Indoor Air Act protects Minnesotans from secondhand smoke in many of the places where we work and play. However, gaps in these protections leave those who live in multi-unit housing vulnerable. I regularly receive calls from renters whose homes are making them sick because of drifting secondhand smoke from neighboring units, a problem exacerbated by the pandemic as Minnesotans have spent more time in their homes. Smoking has made a comeback during the pandemic, leaving some who live in multi-unit housing without a healthy place to shelter. To address this health issue, ANSWER partners with local health departments and the housing industry to support smoke-free housing policies. Because of this work over the past decade, there are nearly 5,000 smoke-free properties in our state that protect hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans from the harms of secondhand smoke. We need tobacco prevention funding so Minnesotans can be in their homes without risk of asthma attacks, respiratory illness, and cancer. And we need treatment programs to help people who want to quit. I urge you to support the governor's proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the agenda, we have Jody Gertken. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you. My name is Jody Gertken. I am the Community Wellness Program Director for CentraCare. Our roots go back to 1886 when the St. Cloud Hospital was built to serve the health needs of people living in central Minnesota. In 1995, CentraCare was formed, which today includes 8 hospitals in St. Cloud, Long Prairie, Melrose, Monticello, Painesville, Redwood Falls, Sauk Center, and Wilmer. We also have more than 30 clinics, 11 senior housing facilities, and 8 long-term care facilities throughout the region. CentraCare has been an instrumental partner and leader in tobacco prevention efforts since the early 2000s. We have actively supported bills such as Freedom to Breathe, Tobacco 21, and numerous other state and local initiatives throughout the years to ensure we are protecting the next generation of Minnesota youth from a lifetime of addiction. For these reasons, I would like to thank Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for investing in tobacco prevention in their budget recommendations. We do support this proposal and prefer the language and funding levels included in Representative Morrison's bills, House File 1410 and House File 569, which would dedicate $15 million a year to tobacco prevention and treatment. The annual cost of smoking in Minnesota is estimated to be over $7 billion. More than $3 billion in excess healthcare costs, and $4 billion in lost productivity. If Minnesota invests in tobacco control at the same or greater levels over the next 20 years, the state will prevent an additional 14,000 smoking attributable deaths, reduce smoking attributable medical spending by $10.2 billion, and increase paid and unpaid productivity by $9.4 billion. So in closing, lowering smoking rates and easing health disparities would create improved health outcomes, reduce inequities, and lower healthcare costs that would benefit all Minnesotans. So thank you for your time to testify this afternoon.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Elise Levine Less. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. My name is Elise Levine Less, and I'm a public health professional working in youth tobacco prevention. I'm here to testify in support of the governor's proposal to increase funding for commercial tobacco prevention and treatment. You may think that public health has won the war on youth tobacco use. In fact, youth cigarette smoking rates are at their lowest point ever. We now have an entire generation of young people who would never pick up a cigarette, who, when I talk with them, describe cigarettes as gross and disgusting, and who are very well versed in the harms caused by cigarette smoking. However, thanks to an ever-changing tobacco industry, we didn't really get rid of the youth tobacco problem. It has instead morphed into a youth e-cigarette vaping problem of epidemic proportions. I've talked with hundreds of Minnesota teens about vaping. And to sum up how many of them feel about vaping compared to cigarettes, here is a quote from one student who told me, "You don't get the gross tobacco feel when vaping. It's just like a fresh, fruity smell, and you can do it anywhere if you want." This is a generation who can't imagine someone lighting up a cigarette in a restaurant or an airplane, but nonchalantly describe classmates vaping in the back of math class into their sleeve and the pre-distance learning normalcy of having to wade through a sea of students passing around a strawberry-flavored vape just to use the school bathroom. Youth nicotine dependence from vaping continues to increase, and adequate funding is needed to support prevention and treatment. Teens do not intend to get addicted to nicotine, and they underestimate the risk. They are surprised how easy it is to lose control and become nicotine dependent, something they could never imagine happening to them. To illustrate this point, I'll leave you with one final quote from a Minnesota teen who shared with me, "I used to vape at school, only at school for the buzz, but then things got a little bit rough in life. Then I got a little bit addicted, and it just kind of went downhill from there." Please support this important funding for commercial tobacco prevention and treatment for all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Pat McCone.
Oops. Technical problems. Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and committee members from a gloomy, wet Duluth. My name is Pat McCone. I'm the Senior Director for Public Policy and Advocacy for the American Lung Association in Minnesota. For over 115 years, the Lung Association has been working to save lives by improving lung health, preventing lung disease through research, education, and advocacy. The Lung Association commends the governor and lieutenant governor in putting these dollars in the budget to invest in proven prevention strategies to stop youth addiction before it starts, along with providing treatment services to those addicted already to nicotine and helping them on their journey to quit. The 2020 Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey gave us grim news, showing that 1 in 5 Minnesota high school students reported using e-cigarettes in the past month. And an alarming, I think this was the most alarming point, 70% of those users reported they had signs of dependence, the nice way of saying addiction. It's no surprise that the tobacco industry's $100 million spent annually in our state to market these products to youth have challenged our efforts. And these gains made in combustible commercial smoking have been lost to the e-cigarette popularity. Along with these sobering numbers, Clearway Minnesota, the foundation established by 3% of the tobacco settlement, and a major funder for our work in Minnesota for sure, is sunsetting this year. The COVID-19 pandemic has also reminded us of the need for comprehensive tobacco prevention and treatment, since people who smoke are at increased risk for more severe illness from COVID-19. The American Lung Association supports this proposal. We do prefer the language and funding levels included in Representative Morrison's bills, which would dedicate $15 million a year to tobacco. A good start, but nowhere near the $100 million that we're up against. In our recent State of Tobacco Control report card, Minnesota scored an F in funding for state tobacco prevention programs. Now is the time for lawmakers in Minnesota to act and take this opportunity to raise our grade, raise our kids and my grandkids in achieving lasting reductions in tobacco-related death and disease. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. And finally, we have, for this section, we have Latricia Vita. Latricia Vita.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome. I'm Latricia Vita. I'm the Director of Health Policy and Advocacy at North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis. I'm also a Minneapolis Parks Commissioner. I support the new investments in tobacco prevention and treatment included in House 52128. As you know, last year, the House passed a resolution calling racism what it is, a public health crisis, and the House Select Committee on Racial Justice recommended additional investments in tobacco control. For decades, Big Tobacco has targeted their deadly products by race. They market cigarettes, especially menthols, specifically to African-American people. They advertise in Black publications and neighborhoods sponsor concerts. They even used to drive around Black neighborhoods handing out free samples of menthol cigarettes. When you consider this, it's no surprise African Americans have the highest death rate and shortest survival rate for most cancers. Black people are also 53% more likely to die from heart disease, the top smoking-related disease. COVID-19 also disproportionately affects the Black community and has worse effects on smokers. Combine these factors, you get a recipe for a population-wide catastrophe. I wish I could say I stand here alone, but I don't. Black people aren't the only ones hurt by cigarettes and other commercial tobacco products. In fact, my story is true for many targeted communities. No question, greater addiction, disease, death are premature in our communities because the industry markets and targets and promotes to us. We can't let the tobacco industry continue addicting and harming the next generation. You have a great power, and I urge you to use it. Increased investments in youth tobacco prevention, treatment programs, community partnerships, research, and evaluation. Together, they will do what needs to be done. Disrupt the tobacco industry's grip on addiction for my community, your community, and all the communities of our beautiful state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. We really appreciate it. So, all right. Well, thank you very much, testifiers, testifying on Article 4. That is really great. Okay, Article 5, we're going to move on here. And first on the agenda is Sarah Messelt. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Messelt, and I am the Executive Director at Proof Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to express my concern for the proposed one-time cut in the governor's budget of $234,000 to the grant which is awarded to Proof Alliance to address statewide needs related to preventing FASD and supporting all impacted. The outcomes that have been achieved with this funding have been lauded as a model of innovation and has helped community partners develop the capacity to serve people with an FASD. Under the guidance from MDH, Proof Alliance has allocated about a fourth of the grant every year, $500,000, to other organizations, tribes, public health partners, to increase their capacity to serve this very underserved population. Over the life of the grant, Proof Alliance has awarded nearly $8 million to 130 organizations, such as the Division of Indian Works, White Earth, and Centricare Health System in St. Cloud. Because so much of the funding is allocated this way, there's always a lag for sub-grantees to spend their full amount in real time. We will continue to work diligently with our community partners across the state to spend the funding in real time and zero out each year as efficiently as possible. Please note that MDH already did a one-time cut last year for $296,000, which was allocated to these community organizations. We juggle priorities and work closely with our partners to mitigate the impact of this unanticipated cut. It was painful for our community and the people we serve, and we were hopeful we would not sustain additional cuts that will impact people during this precarious time. I know serving underserved communities is a high priority, and so the cut being proposed in the governor's budget for the FASD community seems inconsistent with those goals. Additionally, the value added by this public-private partnership between Proof Alliance, MDH, and these communities is a model for maximizing taxpayer dollars and has served the people of our state for 18 years. I respectfully ask the committee to not adopt this provision in the MDH budget. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And did I miss Caitlin DeVos? I'm sorry. Did I miss a testifier on the last section? Ms. Yeah, DeVos, are you here?
Yes, I am here.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Please go ahead.
Things happen, not a problem. So thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. My name is Caitlin DeVos. I am a Lakeville resident and constituent of Representative Bierman, and I am a volunteer for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I'm speaking today in support of the $8 million a year for tobacco prevention and treatment funding included in Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's revised budget. When I was 19, I learned too early in life the toll that cancer takes on a family when I lost my mom to colon cancer. I put college on hold in order to be there for her, and cancer caused agonizing emotional and financial stress for me, my dad, and my younger brother. Because of this, I have committed much of my life to fight against cancer, which includes fighting against tobacco's deadly impacts. And unfortunately, my dad also lost a parent too early in life, his father, and that death was caused in large part by his heavy tobacco smoking. We know that nearly one-third of all cancer deaths are caused by smoking. And we know that tobacco prevention and treatment programs improve the health of Minnesotans and help prevent families from hearing the words, "You have cancer." Lawmakers have the opportunity this session to prevent youth addiction, help adults quit, and prevent cancer in our state. I am very grateful that this committee has prioritized these investments by hearing multiple funding bills, including Representative Morrison's bill to dedicate $15 million annually using the uncollected tobacco settlement payments. I hope that the legislature and the governor can work together to invest $15 million a year in tobacco prevention and treatment programs. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I apologize for skipping you on the list here. Thank you for testifying. And, you know, I will just say to all the folks that are here today to testify about the terrible impact of tobacco on our families, you know, there's probably not a one of us who are unaffected by this. And just to say, I've said this before in public, that my own mother died of COPD due to smoking. So this is a very, very common experience, and one that we should make this an experience that nobody has. Absolutely. So thank you for your testimony. Okay, back we go to Article 5, and we have one more testifier on the list, and then I hope all of our testifiers can stay around a little bit in case we have questions on the various testimonies. So Mary Krinke.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. And I'd like to provide some comments on Section 14 of Article 5. Since the year 2000, the Minnesota Department of Health has been doing studies on maternal mortality death rates. And what they're proposing here today is to add morbidity studies to that statute language. And they want to go back to the year 2000 for those studies. And I want to be clear, the Minnesota Hospital Association is not opposed to doing morbidity studies. We think that that is a good thing to do. There are a couple things that I do want to raise with you of concern. Number one, the language that is in the bill now says that they can disclose the provider's name. This would, I think, be taking us off track of what the intent is. The intent is to prevent and to work on best practices and quality and see what we can learn rather than add the provider's individual name. Number two, I think it would be very difficult for our hospitals with this burden of going back to the year 2000. That would be 20 years of data going back, requesting information on morbidity going back to the year 2000. I would actually like to offer up a partial solution from the Minnesota Hospital Association. In 2016, the Hospital Association began getting what's called ICD-10 codes. And I know this is very technical, but it's the International Classification of Disease Codes. And this is revision 10, so that's why it's called ICD-10. And we have information that could be of assistance to the Minnesota Department of Health as they're doing these morbidity studies. We could actually be the source of some of that data that they're requesting, looking at ICU admissions, looking at if new prospective moms needed additional blood. We can work with them on what these morbidities are that they're looking for. It would be our strong preference not to burden our hospitals with going back 20 years of asking them for data that they may or may not have. So I just want to be clear, we're not opposed to looking at morbidity studies, but we think that it can be done in a better fashion. And we'd also like to request that the individual provider's name is not part of it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Appreciate that. So can we then, we can go back to, let's see, the staff is telling me that we do have staff who could walk through Article 5 for us. And why don't we do that? Even though we've already had the testimony, we have someone from the Department of Health. Yeah, welcome.
Hello, Chair Liebling. For the record, I'm Lisa Timian. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Health, and we are nothing but a well-oiled machine today. Just very on our A-game. So we thank the committee for their patience with us. I think the last year is starting to take its toll. So briefly, and we have some of our experts from the agency on if there are questions about any of these, but very broadly, Article 5 for the Health Department, Sections 1 through 7 deal with e-health provisions. 8 through 12 are some adjustments to our radiation program and monitoring indoor air radiation use. 13 addresses the newborn screening and does some fee adjustments there. Section 14, as Ms. Krenke from the Hospital Association just mentioned, does deal with maternal morbidity and death studies. And of course, we would be happy to continue conversations as to how we can get this into workable. We know that this is a very important way to be able to understand health disparities and address those in the state. 15 is our fetal infant death studies. And then 16 through 19 sections deal with our asbestos program. So we do a wide range of work here at the health department.
All right, well, thank you. Thanks for coming on at short notice to give us that walkthrough. And so let's see if there are any questions from members about any of the things that we've covered or to any of the testifiers. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess more just a couple of comments. I really want to thank all the testifiers who came on to speak to the importance of tobacco prevention investment. I just want to emphasize how important it is with the sunset of Clearway that we continue to invest in protecting our youth from the scourge of lifelong addiction to tobacco products. And I also just want to respond to Ms. Krenke's comments. I appreciate the challenge of going back 20 years. That's a lot of data, and that's probably burdensome on the hospitals. But I do hope that we are able to find a way to delve into that information. I think it is critical that we add morbidity studies to our studies of maternal mortality as we try to get at what has been happening across the country. It is not just in Minnesota, but Minnesota is no exception. We know that we have unacceptable disparities between our Black and American Indian Minnesotan mothers and their white counterparts, and we need to figure out what's going on so we can fix that.
All right, thank you, Representative Morrison. Representative Damuth, and then Representative Pryor. Representative Damuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe this question will be for DHS. It looks like some of those licensing fees have really increased dramatically. Can you explain what would the underlying causes, the services, why the fees are so greatly increased in a number of these areas under Article 5?
Okay, Representative Damuth, I think you mean the Department of Health, not Human Services today.
Thank you, Department of Health. Yes.
Right. Ms. Timian.
Well, and I'm trying to look through to see if any of my colleagues are on to speak to this. I'm not sure if, from the budget perspective, Joshua would be able to weigh in. I do know that there were some structural imbalances that we're also trying to address through our SGSR, and I'm not sure if this is part of that adjustment. So I apologize, I don't have that, but Representative Davis would be happy to get back to you.
All right, well, here is that. Mr. Bunker. So okay, let's great. See if he can answer the question. Mr. Bunker.
Madam Chair and members, my response was going to be very similar to my coworker. I apologize that we'll have to get back to you on the answer to those questions today.
Okay, Mr. Bunker, if you could provide that in writing and then send it to Mr. McQuillan so that he can send it to all the members of the committee. I think it's a very good question, and we should all know the answer to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Pryor and then Quam. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, maybe this has been brought up before in any some of our meetings, but when we talk about the sunset of Clearway, how much, what was their budget that now will disappear? And, yeah, and so the work that they were doing to fund tobacco cessation will not be continuing. So how big is the hole that we have to fill right now? And I'm not sure who can answer that.
Mr. Bunker, is that something that you would have information on, or if not, maybe Mr. Berg can help fill that in for us. But Mr. Bunker?
Madam Chair, I do not have the information on the funding.
Okay, Mr. Berg, can you help us out?
Not much, Madam Chair. I can. I say this frequently. Clearway, Minnesota was in no way a state entity. It was a nonprofit that was set up as part of the original legal settlement with tobacco companies. Members tend to imagine kind of that the Clearway gets its allowance from the state or that their money flows through the state treasury. It does not in any way. And so I don't have any information on what their budget is. And they are, again, not, it's not part of the state's budget. It does not flow through the state's budget. They are a time limited entity by the tobacco settlement and are going out of business. I think this year. I don't know. Maybe Ms. Clarquist knows the end date. It's either this year or very soon.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Berg. And you know, in the 2019 budget, Clearway was here advocating that we start to fund the Department of Health to take over a lot of those responsibilities. And we did that to try to continue some of this work, knowing that they were going to go out of business. And if Ms. Moylanen is here, she probably is the one. And I was just told she is here. Welcome. She can answer the question, I'm sure.
All right. Thanks to Zoom. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Pryor. Clearway Minnesota's budget has fluctuated over the years, and we have had decreasing budgets now for about the last 10 years. So between, we've been in the range of about $17 million a year, and that has decreased over the past 10 years or so, and our last fiscal year budget has about been approximately $4.5 million. So these funds are really necessary. We know that over time, our overall investment in tobacco prevention has been decreasing. These funds will not get us back up to where we were as a state, but they are a great start. Thank you.
Representative Pryor, anything further for Ms. Moylanen? Okay, thank you, Ms. Moylanen. Thanks for hopping on quick to answer that question. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but it looked as if Representative Morrison had her hand come up during that questioning, and she might be wanting to speak directly on the last line of discussion.
Thanks, Representative Quam. Representative Morrison, did you want to something to have a question for Ms. Moylanen?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam. No, actually, mine is it's about something else, so you were ahead of me, so please go ahead.
All right. Okay, back to Quam.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And some members of the committee may remember it was 6, 8, 10 years ago, there was a study on hospitals. And when they did that study, they didn't have some factors incorporated, which was complexity, referral, so that Mayo ended up getting some dings because they were the second or third stop for someone with a complex condition. And that reminded me of that when we do these studies, we need to have some factors for complexity because some cases are referred to Children's or other hospitals in the metro area or Mayo, and they would just naturally have a higher morbidity because of the complexity or of some pre-existing condition or morbidity. And so when we haven't discussions about these studies and collecting data, especially years and years ago, just the suggestion that they add additional detail that might explain some of what's happening, so that if all the hard cases went to one of the hospitals in the metro, that didn't, since it's recording location of the facility, that didn't skew a bad impression that's not, you know, the data's not there for. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Quam. I hear you. I think the point is well taken that it's not just collecting data. It's also having a good study design that tells you what you need to know and tries to deal with confounding factors. So your point is very well taken. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to go back to Ms. Messelt, if she's still on. I was concerned to see a cut of that grant to Proof Alliance. I'm very well aware of the important work that Proof Alliance does. And I'm wondering if she could just speak a little bit more to what it would mean to lose that grant for the work that Proof Alliance does.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Morrison. Ms. Messelt, and of course, there is an amendment there that was amended, but they're still taking 1 year of the grant that I guess was what was considered underspending, is my understanding. So if you could address that, it'd be great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair Liebling and Representative Morrison. Grateful for this opportunity. And yes, the grant is managed in a 5-year cycle. And so we have $2 million a year over, and so $10 million over a 5-year contract. And as I mentioned before, because a lot of what we do is to award a part of this funding to community-based organizations, there's always a lag, as I mentioned in my testimony. And so we try to zero out every 5 years, but from year to year, there's this lag in the ability, we've always had the ability to carry over funds, because we know it takes a while once you are awarded a grant to hire staff to, you know, get up and going. And so last year, which wasn't one of our 5-year zero out times, as I mentioned, we experienced a $296,000 cut. And now this year, the one-time cut is being proposed at $234,000. And that would mean significant cuts to those community programs, the prevention innovations that we're doing across the state, the importance of all people, all women, knowing that there's no safe amount of alcohol to use during pregnancy, and a lot of the work that we're doing in, you know, a variety of community organizations across the state. And so it will definitely hurt, and it certainly does not seem like a great time during a time when alcohol use has increased, binge drinking has increased by 41% among women during the pandemic, and people living with an FASD are continuing to be marginalized and challenged by their daily lives with special education needs and distance learning and all of the challenges on both the prevention and the support side of what we do. So we hope that this is not adopted in this proposal.
Representative Morrison, any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer and for your work, Ms. Messelt. So in other words, that money has not gone unspent or unused. And thank you also for reiterating in your comments that alcohol use disorder, there's plenty of evidence that it's gotten worse over this past year. So it strikes me as not a great time to cut resources to organizations like Proof Alliance that are doing this important work in fetal alcohol syndrome prevention. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Morrison. And I just want to follow up on that too, Ms. Messelt. I was glad that Representative Morrison asked you, because I wanted to go back to you as well. And do you have any data on sort of what's happening with FASD? Are we continuing to see more cases of, I realize there's a bit of a lag, and I'm also concerned about, you know, with alcohol use up, what this may mean, but what's the trend with FASD? Do you know that?
Unfortunately, we're doing a better job of keeping track of it. And what that means is that we are definitely seeing steady rise in alcohol use. And that's translating to, we know now the CDC reports that in Minnesota, the data that they track, 1 in 9 pregnancies are exposed to alcohol. We know with a recent large study that was conducted by the National Institute of Health that the prevalence is 1 in 20 first graders in the general population are considered to have been prenatally exposed and at risk of developing an FASD. So the rates are incredibly high. It's a significant, persistent, chronic public health issue we see the concern and that true concern that exists around opioid use, around meth, around a lot of different substances. But alcohol is a persistent, legal, chronic issue that, really, really is a challenge for our communities.
Okay, thank you so much. I also hope that we don't, we're going to do our best not to, cut things that will hurt the public health. And, I was also concerned. I do want to just note, though, that, when the governor's budget is put forward, departments are under certain constraints, and the Department of Health actually uses very little state money. It's mostly federally funded. So when they need to cut their budget, they have very little places they can go to do that, especially during a pandemic. But that certainly doesn't constrain this committee. So we hope, anyway, assuming that we can make the money go for all the things we need it to go for. So thank you very much. Okay, we have reached the end of testimony. Are there other questions or discussion from members? If not, we can certainly let everybody go early. Other questions, comments? All right, well, thank you very much again to all the testifiers who have been here today. We really appreciate it. And I do wanna just let members know that our next meeting will be Friday. We're going to be meeting 3 to 4:30, and we're going to have a joint hearing with the Human Services Committee. So those of you who are on both committees, I'm sorry, you're going to have you won't have an extra meeting because you'll be here anyway. For those members, it will be an extra hearing, but we're going to hear from the administration on the money coming from the federal government under the American Rescue Plan that affects our budget area. So that should be a very interesting hearing, and we'll get information on that sent out to all of you. And with that, I don't think we have any more business before the committee today, so we stand adjourned. Thank you.